This is For Your Reference, a sports reference podcast.
Welcome back to For Your Reference, a sports reference podcast. My name is Charlotte. I'm on the data team at Sports Reference, and this is the place where we get to share the interesting, fascinating stories that we just happened to come across while building the Sports Reference family of websites. I'm here solo today to talk about historical NBA draftees that were picked for reasons other than their basketball prowess that teams believed would translate to the NBA level. I guess I'll just give a little background of how I got to this topic. For the past, I think, 8 years or so, Sports Reference had been in the practice of creating new player identities for every player drafted to the NBA, giving them a unique player ID. And keen users of the site might have noticed that those player IDs actually appear in the URLs of player pages, and they're just created by taking the first five letters of a player's last name, the first two letters of their first name, and then we throw a number on the end to differentiate multiple players with the same letters in their names. And occasionally, just a few times, we've had sort of unfortunate situations where the five-letter, two-letter combination ends up creating a inappropriate or derogative term. And so in those cases, we do deviate from our rule. But usually you can just find somebody by the player ID of last five, first two, plus a number. And I actually had a project just in the last year or so to create these unique identities for players who had been drafted in historical NBA drafts but never made the NBA. And there's a lot of them. In recent history, pretty much everyone who's drafted, you know, is a relevant name in the world of basketball. Even if they don't play in the NBA, they're likely going to sign a training camp contract or appear internationally or in the G League. But it used to be the case that the draft was a whole lot longer and included a whole bunch of people that are kind of impossible to track down because who knows if they ever did anything else in the basketball world. There used to be as many as, you know, 20, 21 was the highest number of rounds in a draft, and that's over 200 players being drafted. We went to our current format of just two rounds in 1989, but we had to first cut to 10, and then to 7, and then to 3, and then finally to 2. Discerning listeners might be thinking, there's only five players on the court at once for a basketball team. What do you do with 10 or 20 rounds worth of new picks every season? They can't possibly all play. And it definitely did lead to some interesting scenarios of people being picked who were never really intended to play for the team. I looked at a newspaper article from the Salt Lake Tribune, and they talked to Marty Blake, who was the NBA's director of scouting for many years. And he says that he remembers drafts where it felt like he was actually picking for every team in the late rounds because he was the only one who'd actually seen the players play in person, and the different teams would come over and ask him, hey, like, who should we pick? We need somebody for round 17, and he would just sort of offer up a suggestion. And then other teams started to see these late round picks as opportunities to send a message or maybe earn some goodwill. One notable pick was Vic Sisson. He was the 206th pick in the 10th round of the 1981 draft by the New Jersey Nets. He was actually four spots ahead of Hall of Famer Tony Gwynn. But what's notable about him was he did not play basketball in college or even in high school, but he was the student manager at UCLA for their basketball team. He was notably 5'7" tall, and his former coach, or I guess not coach, but the, you know, head of the team he was a student manager for, Larry Brown, at UCLA, had just moved over to the New Jersey Nets, and he wanted to draft a UCLA senior, and Sisson was the only option. So Larry Brown went ahead and drafted him, and Sisson later described the pick as a graduation present. Another selection in that gift pick category was 1984 draft pick Mike Curran. He played at Niagara, and former Niagara coach Frank Layden had since moved over to the Utah Jazz and decided to throw a pick his way. There was a $65,000 contract with Curran's name on it, with the small stipulation that he actually had to make the team. And he wasn't going to pass up that opportunity, so he did go out to training camp. And he remembers being told on the last day by Layden, "You're a good player. You'll be a good businessman," as he let him go. And you know what? Layden might have been prophetic, because he ended up becoming a managing partner at the Curran Group, which is an executive search firm in the financial services industry, and did not look any further into what that means. Frank Layden also took a chance on Keith Webster in the seventh round in 1987 in what was described as a favor to the player's basketball coach father. His dad was a coach at Bridgeport, and Keith Webster was a recent Harvard grad, but he actually did pretty well. Frank Layden said that he outplayed their third round pick, Billy Donovan, at training camp, but unfortunately, Bill Donovan and Keith Webster were both cut in favor of point guards John Stockton and Ricky Green, and the team didn't want any more than two. They had to cut it off there. But the coach reported that Keith Webster actually came to him after being cut and said, "Coach, don't feel bad. I graduated from Harvard, and I'm going to UCLA Law School. I'll remember you when I own a team." And you know what? Just getting to show up in training camp and have that experience is something that these guys can talk about for the rest of their lives. I think one of the sweetest stories that I came across was actually a draft pick that got handed out to Landon Turner, who was paralyzed in a car accident 4 months after winning the 1981 national championship with Indiana. He was given the final 225th pick in the 1982 draft in recognition of the player he would have, could have, should have been. And he later received commemorative watches from the Celtics, the team that drafted him, when they went on to win the 1984 and 1986 championships. On the less sweet and more crafty side of things, Phil Elderkin was a newspaper writer who sort of pitched himself as a potential draft pick, and he ended up getting picked by the Cavaliers in the 17th round of the 1973 draft. Elderkin described the Cleveland Cavalier coach Bill Fitch as somebody who likes to, quote, tweak the establishment's nose. And after he made the selection, he was interviewed by Sports Illustrated about his unconventional 5'6" older in years draft pick, and he gave them the quote, "He was the only guy I could find who didn't have an agent. We'll play for the 1960 minimum and we'll bring his own shoes." There were other players who were drafted who were never seen as serious potential NBA players, but were certainly not athletic jokes in the way that Phil Elderkin was sort of intended to be. We had track star Carl Lewis picked in the 10th round of the 1984 draft. That was the same year he won 4 gold medals in sprints and long jump. And years later, GM Rob Thorne was quoted saying the pick was a pure publicity stunt by one of the Bulls owners who thought it would be, quote, cute. Bob Beamon and Bruce Jenner were other notable names to appear on draft lists after winning Olympic gold medals. And it was sort of thrown out there that the Kansas City Kings were supposedly making fun of the Kansas City Chiefs by taking the, quote, best athlete available, which was the Chiefs' mindset in other drafts around that time. And before I wrap up, I do want to say that there were possibly even crazier draft selections out there, although I had some troubles verifying. I found some quotes from scouting director Marty Blake, and he says he remembers an owner's doctor being drafted, as well as somebody's brother and the son of a season ticket holder. However, when I searched these phrases, I came up with absolutely nothing. not sure I could find even anybody who had medical school credentials at the time of the draft, so definitely skeptical of that claim. And then I also found a lot of little tidbits or articles about the 1977 draft, when the Lakers supposedly tried to draft Scooby-Doo and had that pick vetoed, and then the Celtics came back and drafted a water boy. So I went and looked at our draft tables on the Basketball Reference website, and I clicked through to see who did the Celtics pick in 1977 in those last few rounds. Was it really a water boy? And when I clicked through to the players they selected, they had college playing records. So I have to say I'm a little skeptical of that particular story that I found in many places around the internet. A number of late round picks did go on to make names for themselves in other ways. We had two late round draft picks who became NBA coaches, Mike Dunleavy and Jay Triano. And 10th round pick Ed Stefanski became the GM of the Philadelphia 76ers team that actually drafted him. And there are lots of college coaches who found their way into the later ends of historical NBA drafts. And beyond that, there were actually 72 players picked in the 7th round or later who found their way into an NBA game. So one thought or question I had is that, are we maybe missing out on some players by having our draft shortened to 2 rounds? And I found a pretty clear answer to that, which is that the Players Association actually pushed for the 2-round draft because it's going to provide greater opportunities for players as undrafted free agents. So it actually sort of frees up players who might have been picked in those later rounds to negotiate different contracts and opportunities for themselves. The, in my opinion, unfortunate side consequence is that we probably won't see any more student managers getting drafted in future NBA drafts. If you have any NBA draft fun facts or other stories you want to share, you can always reach us at podcast@sportsreference.com. Thank you so much for listening.